Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another episode of Home Team. Been really pleased with what Coach Nellis has been sharing with us here. He's got another great one today. Again, focused on that work-life balance. I don't know if there's ever balance in it, but we have to find a way that we can keep our priorities straight, that we can make our jobs more efficient so that we do have the time we need to dedicate towards our families and all those other things that need to be priorities in our life. So here you go, another one with Coach Nellis.
Coach Eilers, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, I appreciate the opportunity to be in here. I'm excited.
Yeah, it's been great just to kind of catch up a little bit and learn a little about your story. But let's jump right in and start talking about the stars of your home team, beginning with your wife. How did you meet this special woman?
Yeah, my wife and I, we've been married for 21 years. And, you know, Rebecca and I met at Northwest Missouri State. And, you know, we actually, you know, we told our kids how we met. You know, I was a football player. And the first night we had the opportunity to be able to go out on the town was, you know, the first night she was on campus. And sure enough, we go to the freshman dance and we met and really had no vision of us dating or anything like that. And a couple months down the road, sure enough, you know, we went out one night and you look back and you're so thankful for that one opportunity to, you know, sit there at Maryville High School football stadium. And we just sat in the bleachers and we talked for about 2.5 hours. And, you know, 21 years later, we had the opportunity to still be married and have two children. It's been a blessing.
What is her background? Maybe what does she currently do, or what does she have passions and interests that she carves out time for in her day?
You know, I think her passion is service, you know, and it's what she does for our family each and every day. And I think, you know, when you go into this profession of being a football coach, it's important for your wife to understand that, you know, you're not a coach just during your time at school. You're a coach 24 hours a day and, you know, every day of the year. And, you know, her passion to service and supporting me during times where I'm frustrated and I'm down on myself. And, you know, she's always there to pick me up and pick our kids up and do things that, is definitely, I think service is the best thing. You know, going through college was kind of funny, you know. I thought I was going to be a teacher, and I kind of joked with her. I said, hey, we could both have the summers off. And but she went into the world of business and works for a great accounting firm from Texas and has the opportunity to work from home. And we're definitely lucky with that opportunity.
What is a character trait that makes her so invaluable in your life?
You know, you look at me and I'm not always even keel. You know, sometimes I'm high and sometimes I get down on myself. And, you know, she's very even keel. You know, when things are great, you know, she kind of sits back and always says good job. But when things are down, she's never down. And I think that is definitely a positive for me. And, you know, she's always pointed out the positives, whether it's, you know, a football game that we weren't very successful in, but she noticed something that we were very successful in that one night. And I just think her positivity and her even keel and what she brings to our family is amazing.
Let's talk about the other members of your starting lineup, and that being the kids. You know, if you wouldn't mind sharing their names, their ages, and then, you know, brag on them a little bit, let them know, you know, what you're proud of them for, what they do to keep themselves busy these days.
Yeah, we're blessed to have two boys. We have a sophomore in high school, Ethan Eilers, and, you know, he's 16 years old. And I mean, one of the biggest things in life is getting that driver's license. And we had the privilege of, you know, him going through that. And it was amazing because he comes back, he got his driver's license. I said, hey, you have to go drive by yourself today. He's like, oh, I don't know if I'm ready. I don't know. I said, huh, that's part of being 16. You have to go. And he came back. And he had a special moment with my wife. And, you know, that song, you know, I'm 16 driving down Main Street. My F-150 comes on. And he walked in the house. And he is just, you know, you realize we are coaching kids. And I get to see it in my own kids each and every day. But, you know, it was a great, great special moment. But, I mean, he's a great athlete for us. You know, he did something this year that we're very proud of. He played basketball his whole life, played football, has played baseball, has been out for track, and he changed things up for us this winter, and went out for wrestling. And, you know, I think if you ask anybody, hey, if you're a first-year wrestler and you're in high school, how's your season going to go? The answer is going to be, it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. And, you know, his resentment and, you know, resiliency and what he did to go through that season, and then to see him get better on the mat each and every week, even though there's times there wasn't victories on the mat, you see his progress. You know, it was one of those things where I continued to tell him, your reward might not be on the mat this year, but it's going to reward you on the football field next year. And he's doing some cool things for us in the track and field right now, and I have the privilege to coach him in those areas. And then we have a seventh grader who's 13 years old, and, you know, is really, you know, I joke around and I say, you know, he is my definition that God has a sense of humor, because whatever worked for, you know, our oldest, whether it's potty training or bedtime, didn't work for our youngest. And I thought I was the best dad in the world, and all of a sudden things aren't working right. And you know, but he brings such a different energy to our family, and we're so proud of what he does. You know, I've always kind of been cautious about youth sports. You know, I don't like seeing kids at such a young age dial into one sport. And you know, since Evan's been in elementary school, his favorite sport has always been the one that he's currently in. And we love that energy that he brings. He's on a traveling baseball team this year right now. And then in the summer, because we're in Iowa, he'll get to play for the school. And then again, I'll have the privilege of being his junior high baseball coach. And, you know, so they're both very fun. They make things interesting when they're together, as I think any siblings do. But we're definitely proud of both of them.
That's awesome. I can definitely relate to you on the God has a sense of humor, because my third son is my third child. He's a piece of work. So
it's amazing when you think you have all the answers as a parent, and then all of a sudden one child comes, and you're like, "Whoa, this is gonna be a different vibe."
He's got his own agenda, so it's a battle of the wills, but that's how it goes sometimes. Next, we're going to move into a section titled We Make the Call and discuss how your family has navigated some of the important decisions throughout your coaching career. You know, we all know the commitment it takes to be a coach. How do those early negotiations go with your wife about this career move?
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of those things where, you know, your wife and you have that relationship, and you understand each other's dreams. And, you know, I had the opportunity to chase every dream I had, you know, from being a football player and then coaching at the high school and collegiate level. And, you know, there's times where, hey, I know there was times, hey, there was tough nights, you know, and, you know, it's one of those things where I come home from a recruiting trip and I'm kind of sad. Hey, I missed this birthday party, or I missed this game. And, you know, I think just those experiences added up all together. You know, I think when you're looking into a new job and stuff, that communication between husband and wife is critical. And I don't think your kids have that opportunity sometimes. I think it's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes we tell our kids, hey, we're moving to Texas, and they're like, whoa, where's Texas? You know, and I think, you know, our kids were pretty young when we made those moves. I know the first time, you know, when we moved back here to the Midwest, we moved back to Iowa, that was probably the first time our kids really were aware, hey, I know where we're going because we have family there. And they were ecstatic. I mean, they were excited. You know, but the one you do worry as a parent, because now they have to build new relationships. Now they have to build, you know, new friends. And I think it's something that later in life they're going to look back, and it kind of made them who they are. But I think it's one of those things that's going to make them very successful, that they can be in a new environment and be able to work with new people and get to know them personally. And but those are tough sometimes. Those are tough on the family.
For our listeners, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about, maybe evaluate how you made some of the decisions. So just a brief overview for our audience. You began at the high, played in college, then went to the high school level, then had an opportunity to coach in college, then went back to the high school level, then went to college, and then high school. Maybe yeah. talk us through some of those, man, I made these decisions or we made these decisions and they were for the right reasons or the wrong reasons, just to kind of help us, you know, hear a little bit about your journey and how you've navigated some of those with your spouse and your kids.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I even go back to when I was in college. You know, I had to go to college an extra semester to do my student teaching. And I remember talking to my advisor. I said, hey, I don't even want to coach at the high school level. I don't want to teach at the high school level. Can I just graduate and not do the student teaching? And ultimately, their answer was no, not even an option. And I thought I knew everything at that age. And, you know, so obviously I went and I did my student teaching. And I was blessed to work with a great man. And I think that's what it's always about. Who do you work with? What are the relationships that you're going to build in that job? And, you know, are you working with good men? And I was. I mean, my first job out of the gate, I was working for a man that, you know, he told the kids he loved them, and he did. And he held them accountable to that love. And, you know, so after student teaching, I had the opportunity. He called and offered me a job in the summer. And, you know, my wife and I are just graduated. And, you know, we looked at the salary that they offered, and $24,000 a year, we were on cloud nine. So to go to that high school level and really to go somewhere that I had student taught and coached with, I'd volunteered during the fall, was definitely, it was comfortable. You know, I didn't have that stress of, you know, meeting new people. And I did value that during that time. My wife actually, you know, was in the business world, and she took a job in Kansas City, you know, so ultimately we moved to an apartment down there, and I was commuting about 45 minute one way commute for 3 years. And I remember we were out at dinner and she said, are you tired of that commute yet? And I was like, wow, you know, I just love the people I work with. I mean, you know, from the head coach to the assistant coach, and, you know, I still keep in touch with those people. I mean, that was really the friendship and the bond that we had created. And, you know, I remember thinking, you know, maybe I could find another job. I don't know. You know, maybe we could find one in Kansas City. And sure enough, I did. I found an opportunity to teach high school and coach in Kansas City. And it was an eye opener. You know, it wasn't the same development of young men. It was, you know, it was more about just the football side of things. And, you know, I think if we're not being developers of men and women, then, you know, then we're selling ourselves short. And I was at Kansas City for 1 year. And, you know, at that point, I really wanted to become a head coach. And, you know, I had to go to a small community of Albany, Missouri. And, you know, it's a community of 1,400 people. And I remember, I still remember really believing, hey, I think we're going to win a state championship my first year, because I know everything about football. And, you know, before this, I had only been a position coach. I had coached the offensive line. I played offensive line in college. And when I became a head coach at a 1A school in the state of Missouri, we had 126 kids in our school. The thing that I learned the quickest was I knew offensive line. but I had so much more to learn as the whole big picture of running a program of offense, defense, special teams, you know, and the development of young men and women. I really learned how much I had to learn. And, you know, I took over a program that was on an 11 game winning streak. And we were 0-9 my first year, and we went 0-9 my second year. And, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, learning on the job was tough, because my biggest hurt was I felt like I wasn't doing enough for the kids. And, you know, I remember my third year there, we went 3-6. And, but the thing that I was the most proud of is we had lost 3 games by 14 or less, which meant we were so competitive. And it was a situation that we were not competitive in those 2 years prior. You know, and again, you meet people in a town of 1400, you're going to meet a lot of people, that are just quality people. And that's exactly what we did in Albany. I'll never forget, my wife was pregnant with our youngest son, Evan. And, you know, I applied for my alma mater where I currently am. And I remember we applied for this job, and we applied for Central Methodist University in Fayetteville, or Missouri. And my wife got really, really, really sick. And sure enough, I called our principal at Albany. I said, "Mike, I apologize, but I'm going to need a sub tomorrow. I'm going to take my wife to the hospital." I said, "I'll be back on Tuesday." And we took my wife down to the hospital. And I'll never forget, because we walked in, and within about 3 minutes, the doctor, my wife was gone. And they rushed her away. And she was, and the doctor came out. And he kind of looked at me and he said, "Do you know how serious this is?" And I didn't. I thought they were going to give us some medicine. We'd be on our way. And we were there for the whole week. On Thursday, she kicked me out of her room. She told me it was time for you to go. Well, we were in the same town that was my first job ever. And she said, go see Coach Duda. Go see Coach Morlock and all those guys. So I did. And ironically, on the way back to the hospital, only twice in my life have I been in a verbal argument with God, and he won both of them. But I told him, I said, "My wife's in the hospital. I have an opportunity to go home. I have an opportunity of a small NAIA collegiate job. I can't make this decision. You have to do it." And he told me very clearly what I needed to do. And on my way back to the hospital, you had to drive by Missouri Western State University. Well, if you ever played football at Northwest Missouri State, they were the evilest of the evilest people. We were 36 miles away from our rival, and you know, we just had a vision of from Missouri Western. So, with God's answer to me, I went down to Missouri Western. I pulled right. I went down by the two ponds and pulled up by the university. And I sat in my car, and I remember, do I really want to go in here? I thought, well, why don't I just go to Northwest and ask them the questions I need? And I went in, and sure enough, Jerry Partridge, who is maybe one of the greatest men I've ever coached for, he saw me, and I mean, he just asked me, "Why are you here? What are you doing here in my building?" And I told him, I said, "Hey, I'm gonna take a job at Central Methodist, and I wanted to come in and learn two things that were gonna make me a better football coach." And that day I walked in there, he asked me if I was interested in a job there, and I said, "You'll have my resume tomorrow." And from our conversation that day, when I walked into the building, I think I went about 100 miles an hour to the hospital because I wanted to tell my wife what the opportunity was. And I asked her, I said, "What do we do?" And she goes, "Well, you need to drive home to Albany to get your resume ready." And sure enough.
She's down for the cause.
Yeah. You know, sure enough, you know, I interviewed. I got the job. And it was just one of those things that both my wife and I look back. And it wasn't a job that we were looking for. It wasn't a job that, you know, we had no vision of, but we just trusted with our faith that that's where we were supposed to be. And, you know, we were with some great people during that time. We had the opportunity to go into the playoffs the first time ever in Missouri Western State University school history, go to the playoffs. And we were really successful. Coach Partridge was a great football coach, and we were successful. But there was a lot of other things that we didn't know about being a collegiate coach. You know, we didn't realize, you know, hey, Sundays you go to church, you start game, you know, you grade the game from the night before, and then you have, you know, you have film until about 11 or 12 that night, and you're going from 7 in the morning until 10:30 or 11:30 each night. And it's not until Thursday after practice, that's the first night you get to go home. And, you know, we didn't know those things going into this job. So we stayed there for 5 years. And then our kids were, you know, my oldest was in elementary, and we just felt like the high school level was going to give me an opportunity to stay home. And really it was one of those things that, you know, I made a mistake, and, you know, we did take a job based on salary, and it was a bad mistake. I think it's something that if anybody had ever asked me, I would say, hey, please, please don't do it based on that. There's got to be other reasons that are positive for you and your family. And, you know, that job only lasted. We went back to the high school level, and that job only lasted for 2 years. And I think if we would have just really been honest with ourselves beforehand, we would have known, hey, this is something that we need to pass on, but we didn't. You know, so after 2 years, you know, didn't realize it, but I did start looking for some college jobs. And I called a good friend of mine, Will Wagner, was the head coach at Angelo State. And I said, hey, Will, I said, I noticed Tarleton State University, who's in your conference, has an offensive line job opening. I said, would you please call, and I'd like to use you as a reference. Would you call on my behalf? And I remember he said, Jay, I can't. And I was on the phone, and I think I kind of just, I think I went numb, because, you know, I really thought he was going to be able to do that for me. And he goes, Jay, my O-line job opened up just 2 days ago, and I can't do it because I want you here. And I'm sitting here going, wait a minute, how does this happen? You know, so they actually flew us down to San Angelo, Texas, my wife and I together. But it was probably the toughest time of our life. Her father was going through some illness, and it was something that was not going to get better. And I think, you know, I think it was one of those times where you just got to trust that, you know, I had the best of a parent or had the best of a family member. And I know that if they were healthy, they would tell me to do something. And we trusted that. And we went down to Texas. You know, and again, we were down there for 5 years, back into the coaching at the collegiate level. But we had a better idea and a better understanding of the expectations and the time commitment and those things. I think the thing that finally caught up with me at the collegiate level was, you know, my oldest son was an eighth grader, and you know, I only got to see one football game, and he still brags about it. But Richard Franklin, who was probably one of the best football players, played safety for us at Angelo State. I was working with him academically, and I looked at Richard and I said, Richard, we're done with academics, and you're going to my son's football game with me, because this is the only one I'm going to see, bud. And he was fired up. Richard was like, let's go. And we went and watched my son play together, Richard and I. And, you know, but that was the only game I saw. And his basketball season started. You know, I think they played 18 basketball games. Well, on Saturdays, you know, I'm on the road recruiting during the whole week. We have recruits on campus on Saturdays. And, again, it just went through that way of where I did not get to see my son play sports. And my dad was the opposite. You know, he was a police officer in Burlington, Iowa. and would not miss my games. I mean, I would look out in the field and see a police car sitting there. And that's not the dad I wanted to be. But, you know, the ironic thing is I applied for the job I'm currently at twice and didn't get it, you know. And you're sitting there wondering, you're kind of praying about things, you know, hey, you know, finally I had to get to the point and I had to apologize. I'm asking for the wrong things. And I remember, you know, in a prayer saying, hey, I'm just going to listen. And where you tell us to go, we're going to do it. And ironically, a phone call came in June, and the guy that they hired over me that last time ended up leaving in the summer, and it was an opportunity for us to come home. So it's definitely been crazy. The thing I can say is, you know, I'm at my dream job. You know, I'm at a job that I want to be at until I retire. I want to do things that we've never done here. I want to win a playoff game. We've never done that in school history. And I don't want to stop there. I want to go on and win a state championship. And that's how I talk with our kids. And, you know, we're not going to take no as an answer. We're going to get it done. So I apologize. That was a long, quite a few different jobs. But,
no,
you know,
that's perfect.
You know, the thing is, I think in this profession, you know, in some professions you can say, hey, you know, I want to be at this position in 2 years or 3 years, or, you know, sometimes, yeah. I think at the coaching profession, you don't know what opportunities right around the corner. And I know that's how it's been during my career.
You mentioned we just had a transition and just following the line of questions. I call it clock management, to how you blend family and football. You gave us one thing to avoid about maybe taking a new job, which was, you know, don't chase the money. But what is one recommendation maybe you have about, maybe one recommendation you can give our listeners, either about how to take a job or thoughts on a job, or about the moving process and making that a little bit more seamless for your family?
Yeah, I tell you, one of the things that we started doing this year, you know, we try to do a family home evening once a month. You know, our kids are going to leave their cell phones at the house. Whether we go bowling, whether we go to a movie, whether we just stay at the house and we're going to cook the dinner together and sit down and have dinner at the table. Just truly make sure you have that opportunity to have that time as your family only. Because, you know, the one thing about being a coach, and we've done it at every level we've ever coached at, we want kids at our house. You know, I wanted my kids when they were 5, 6, 7 to be around the players, and I wanted them to get to know them. And I think the biggest thing it gave me the opportunity was to be home with my family, but it also gave me an opportunity for my players to see me not as coach. You know, they got to see me as a dad, or they got to see me as a husband. And I think the thing that I would recommend to any coach, if you're going to be in this profession, please, please, please make sure that your house is open to your players, and that they're, you know, they feel welcome to come to your house and be there with you and your family.
Other than, you know, a lot of players will talk, or coaches will talk about, we talk about marriage things, and during the season, they're like, oh, you know, like you mentioned, Thursday nights we go out to dinner, right? And that's pretty commonplace. I think most coaches would agree they do something along those lines. But what is maybe a different small thing that you do to help your marriage during the season?
I think that's a question for my wife, in all honesty, and probably it's something that I need to ask myself sometimes too, you know. And I know one of the things that my wife and I have talked about and we feel is a blessing is, at the high school level, I'm home 99.9% of the time. You know, I get to be at our house when our kids go to bed, or, you know, my wife and I are in the same bed at night. Where at the collegiate level, that was difficult. You know, you're on the road recruiting, you know, three and a half months a year, from spring recruiting and winter recruiting. I think from our conversations together, I think the thing that we feel blessed and lucky about is, at the high school level, is I'm home on a daily basis.
What is one thing you do on a semi-regular basis to help out with things on the home front? I know for me, sometimes it's, I do the dishes. You know, for other coaches we've talked about,
yeah.
I take care of the laundry. What is something that maybe right. you do on the home front to help take care of things?
Well, my wife and my son are sitting here and they're laughing. So I'm scared to answer. But a true story okay. is this, Valentine's Day, my wife went to Salt Lake City for my niece's wedding, and she was gone for about a week. And I'm telling you, she came home. She was gone for 3 days. She's laughing. She was gone for 3 days. She came home, and Joel, I'm serious. I was so embarrassed on what her house looked like. I was so embarrassed. We didn't do any laundry. And the dishes, yep. I mean, I was embarrassed. And I sat there and I was like, wait a minute. She's gone 3 days. And I mean, you know, so I tell you something. I tried. I said, hey, I am doing all the laundry and I'm doing all the dishes. And I was rocking this thing for a while. And we got to a point on laundry. She said, hon, I don't think the loads are big enough. I think you're kind of wasting some laundry to church. I said, well, do you want to go back the way it was? Well, the sad thing is we're kind of working towards back to that. And I think it's one of those things we just got to continue to remind ourselves and be thankful for what our wives do and do step up. And, you know, I know we come home tired. And but I know she's tired too, and she deserves better than what I do on a regular basis.
Sure. Kids, you know, told you to talk about kids being able to come to practice, and that's not unusual, I think, these days. There are more coaches I've been fortunate to talk to. But what are maybe other ways you've seen kids be involved with the team or with other coaching commitments that you may have?
Like my specific children, like my kids?
Yeah, could be, or at programs that you've been at. You know, have you seen creative things that guys have done to help keep their families involved or their kids involved?
You know, one of the things, and Will Wagner was phenomenal at it at Angelo State, and Jerry Partridge was too, you know. I mean, whether we went, you know, we had a team bowling. We did a dodgeball tournament 1 year at Angelo State, and my kids can look back and they can remember that dodgeball tournament because they were in the game. And, you know, just truly giving them the opportunity to be a part of those things. You know, my 13-year-old, he was talking, you know, we took our football team to a place to eat one night, and we watched a fight on pay-per-view. And he was like, why did I have to leave so early? I was like, because the fight was starting on. We didn't want you. You were a little young at that age, but, you know, just making sure that those kids are there. You know, here at West Burlington, we feed our football team every Thursday, and you know, the coaches and their families are there. You know, my wife and I and our coaching staff, we had 38 football players at our house last month. And the thing that I thought was a blessing about it was, you know, the coaches' wives were there. All their kids were there. One of our coach, his daughter had just turned 15 that day. You know, she's there on her 15th birthday. And I remember asking her, are you miserable to be here? And she was so nice and polite, and she was so thankful to be here. And, you know, just really having families together. And I think that's one of those things that, I enjoy and I want to do a better job of is, you know, coaches, we love working together. I mean, yeah, we can get mad at each other and 5 minutes later, you know, it doesn't matter. You love working with the people you do, but I want my wife to know their wives. And I think the complete part of your families knowing each other is important on a staff.
No doubt about it. What have you ever, so maybe in your other coaching staffs, obviously you're the head coach, what events have you attended during your season? I know you mentioned that one story about getting to see your son's game. Maybe in your case, Was there any reason that prevented you from asking the head coach at the time, from, you know, asking, hey, can I leave early to go see my son play? Or can I, you know, maybe I'm sure there's a lot of guys that maybe have that out there where they want to see their kids' events. They understand it may look bad, you know, if they do that. They don't want to seem like they're giving any less. You know, what maybe stopped you from asking that question earlier in your career, and maybe what has changed in that world?
The funny thing is, and I've talked about addiction a couple times, you know, and addiction's a dangerous thing. And I can't look at too many things and say that's something I've been addicted to. But, you know, I joke around. I say Mountain Dew's one of them. I think it's the best drink in the whole world. But, you know,
I think a lot of coaches would agree. I think a lot of coaches, it's pretty much the drink of choice, I think, for most coaches.
Right. But I'll be honest, you know, and I look back at my times, my 10 years being a collegiate football coach, and it's probably my closest to being, I love being in the film room. I loved watching practice. I loved watching game film. I loved doing those things. And, you know, I would say probably the part where, you know, what made you not ask those questions was, you know, I always had written down in my goals, if I ever became an offensive coordinator, I wanted to have morning meetings, you know, because I didn't want to miss anything else. I just kept getting to the point where I was done. I just felt emotionally, I'm done missing. But I was never really in that position where I got to set a time on when we meet, you know, and I think, you know, maybe being an offensive line player, being an offensive line coach, you know, I think we're always trying to do things for other people. And I just never felt confident about asking, you know, can we, I'm willing to come in at 4:30 in the morning so that I could be done after practice. And I know some staffs do that, but ultimately I think it takes somebody to be in the position of leadership, in the position of a decision, that you can make that decision. Hey, we're going to come in here at 4:30. And be done after practice. I just never felt confident to ask.
No doubt. And that's a very legitimate concern. And like you said, sometimes it gets away from you, or you're not in the decision-making process, and other guys in your staff are at different phases in their life, and maybe it doesn't make sense.
Definitely.
Yeah, those are all warranted concerns. This is a question that can stump some coaches. How do you manage your phone time when you are at home?
Oh, when I was at the collegiate level, horribly. You know, I mean, my wife would tell you, when I was at the collegiate level, it was, you know, are you really going to respond to that text? Are you really going to answer that call? Are you going to tweet that kid back? And, you know, I think I felt like I always had to, you know, and I think the way I spoke about it is I said, hey, if I'm not, another coach is, and I don't want to lose this kid. I want him to come here to Angelo State or Missouri Western. And, you know, and I think at the high school level, it's toned down, obviously. I'm recruiting the kids in the hallways, you know, but it's definitely gotten better. I won't say I'm very good at it yet, but it's gotten better. The managing your phone, that's the one thing I do like about our family home evenings, you know, is we're going to drop our phones. You know, we don't even have them there to pick up. We don't even have them there to respond. You know, but like tonight, I had to respond to one parent, you know. We got one of our girl athletes' new throwing shoes, and she was excited about picking those up. So, but it's toned down. It's toned down to high school level.
Right. There's a saying amongst coaches that we all kind of embrace and maybe helps us a little bit, that the person with the marker last will win. And we can do that game for hours. How do you avoid being too analytical every week and therefore spend maybe unnecessary time preparing?
You know, and I think it's really based on your scheme. And you know, I was a guy that I always felt like I could fix things with scheme. You know, from my early days at Albany, Missouri, you know, even to now, you know, you learn different schemes through your coaching career. And I think that's one of the hardest things to evaluate at a new job is, well, what fits the kids best? And ultimately what we came to here at West Burlington Notre Dame High School is, you know, the flex bone fits us. And we have a quarterback that can be very successful with it. We were not very big in the offensive line. We've been very young. We're excited that we're going to have juniors on the O-line next year. So, and I think the flex bone has given us an opportunity that, you know, when we evaluate film, we're different than a lot of people. I'm not going to evaluate if you're in a 4-3, if you're in a 4-4, if you're in a 3-3 stack. I'm going to evaluate the personnel. I'm going to have notes on each kid, each number, what I think their strengths are, what I think their weaknesses are. Because too many times in this offense, a team shows you one defense on Friday night and what they've done all year, but they're scared to do that scheme on Friday versus a flex bone. So that's really helped us a lot on our game film. On the defensive side of the ball, you know, I'm a huge believer. We're going to play the percentages. I want to know what their top four formations are. If there's a big drop off between 3 and 4, then we're going to stop what they do best. And, I know Tipton, Iowa this year, they're going to run belly. They're going to run buck sweep. And, I had to tip my hat off because we got them to a 5th, 6th, and 7th thing that they've never shown on film. And they had a lot of success for against us on those things that they never showed on film. So I think it's critical to play the percentages and just say, hey, we're going to force you to go to what you have not shown on film. And we're going to take away what you do best.
Awesome. That's a great answer. I like the idea of, like you said, analyzing personnel, especially with the intricacies of your offense and, create those personnel mismatches, I think is a great way to stop from being too schematic, which is great.
Right.
The final set of questions we'll call prevent defense and hopefully provide some bigger picture things that can prevent a coach from losing what's most important. You obviously already shared a huge struggle you had with your wife becoming ill and sort of what transpired from there. Maybe you can elaborate a little more, but, share a struggle that you've had to overcome as a family in your career and what maybe other coaches could learn from it.
Well, I think one of those was, being 17 hours from home. And yeah, we were adults. We were raising our own family. But, I think you drive 17 hours and you see your family for Christmas and then to pack up and say, hey, we'll see you next year. That was tough, that was tough. But we were around so many good people that, it made it easier. I don't know if I can answer that question real well right now. I've been blessed. I've been pretty lucky on, who we've been surrounded by. I think the toughest thing is not always what happens to you specifically. It's what happens to your players. When you have a kid that loses his mom, sitting in an office with a kid and, praying and talking to that kid about his loss. I think right now that's probably what's coming to my mind, those are things that, we don't, as coaches, we're not always prepared for. And I think your faith is critical in putting you in a position to be prepared, when your players have something that's catastrophic or something that's really tough for them to handle.
No, that's a great answer. And I would agree that those are definitely, doesn't necessarily have to come from you. It can come from, the things that go on and transpire in the lives of your players, because obviously they mean so much to all of us.
Yeah, definitely.
What is one important aspect of parenting that carries over into coaching?
I think being consistent. I you don't want to be a coach out there that, well, hey, this week we're asking you to block it this way, but But now, you know, I mean, I think it's important that you're consistent. And then I do think with this generation, I think we have to tell them the why. You know,
yes.
I know when I played, I was never told the why. It was you do this and you better do it very well.
Yes.
And I remember being told, because if you don't do it well enough, we're going to put somebody else in. And I
right.
that scared me to death, you know.
Right.
But I think the two things are is, you know, being consistent is critical. And I do think we have to teach the why. I don't think that's something that's always had to been done. But why are we doing this drill? Why do we
right.
run this play? Why did we choose this offense? You know,
yep.
why is this discipline this reason? You know,
yep.
and then we always have to be honest. We have to be honest.
By seeing your commitment to your family, and it's obvious that you have a big commitment to your family, how does that indirectly or directly help your players grow as men?
Well, yeah, I think you have to have them around your family for them to do that. You know, my wife and I'm looking at her house. We bought a house that we completely remodeled. You know, and I remember one day one of our football players was walking by the front yard, and he was in an argument with his brother, and there were shoes being thrown. One's younger, one's older. And I remember bringing the younger brother into our house, and I had him cut some of our backsplash tile on our wet saw. And I'm probably lucky he didn't cut his fingers off, right? I mean, that would have been pretty bad. I remember that day. And I mean, we're in the summer. And, you know, I just think when your players have the opportunity to truly see you for who you are, they're going to see that in your family. And I think, I know that's a big belief in me right now. I took over a school that where our program is struggling, and we're going to go into year three next year. And I believe based on, you know, having kids over to our house, based on recruiting kids and being consistent, that we're going to have more players out on year three than we've ever had so far. And there are powers and there's, you know, strength in numbers. So, you know, I think it's just important for you to be consistent and for those kids to see you in those roles, you know, as a husband. My wife and I, like I joked earlier, I mean, we live in the parking lot of the school, and people don't believe it until they come by and they see where we live. But we go to school plays. We go to the girls' basketball games, the guys' basketball games. We're going to support our student athletes in our school. And I think they see that as it's my wife and I together and not just me.
Yeah, that is a huge component. What is one thing you've changed in the last 3 years that's helped you be a more effective coach?
My family doesn't deserve that Friday night loss all day Saturday, all day Saturday night, all day Sunday, and all day Sunday night. You know, losing is tough. And I know when I was younger, you know, when I was younger, we lost. I'm not going to sleep. I can't go to bed. I'm
right.
going to watch film until 6 a.m. I'm going to know every reason why we lost. But then guess what? I'm not a very good husband all day Saturday. And I could have watched the game on Saturday after a night of sleep. You know, I think the thing that I've done better than I've ever done is, hey, I'm going to learn from that mistake. I'm going to learn from that loss, but I'm not going to take it out on my family.
Great insight. It's hard to do sometimes, especially when we put so much time and effort in, but I think that's a huge huge insight into how to, like you said, you got to manage the other days, and those are sometimes the only days you get to see your family. So
right.
It's important,
yeah.
important to do that.
Losing hurts. Oh, it hurts.
Well, when you're a good enough coach and you know that, you know, I think the thing that I've appreciated from my college career onwards, in high school we weren't very good, and I don't think that, I shouldn't say, my senior year we were pretty good, But, you know, I realized that once I got into college and played at that level, right, you knew you could, if you lost, it wasn't because of the other team, it's because of what you did to yourself, you know. And if you're a good coach, you coach hard enough and you know what you're doing, that's the hardest part, is that maybe you didn't need the marker last in terms of a design, but there was a rule or something that wasn't the right way. You know, that was a coachable thing that you coached before and you got exposed or whatever. And that's the hardest part about losing, is there's plays that could have been made that weren't, you know, and that's, but like you said, you got to move on and you got to not be a detriment to your family, regardless of the outcome. So.
Definitely. You know, in last year, you know, we started five sophomores and three freshmen at varsity football, you know, and I joked about it earlier. Hey, we are ecstatic to have juniors on our offensive line this year, you know? And that's the one thing, and I was consistent with our kids. I said, hey, we're not always going to be young, because it was so important that we kept those kids out, because their best football's ahead of them. And the great thing is they believe it, they see it. They put in great work ethic in the weight room, and we're fired up for next year. And you know, we're fired up. We're excited here.
Yes, I would agree. And it's funny you say that. I was just thinking of our own program that I coach at, and I don't think in the 5 years that I've been here we've ever had to start a sophomore on the offensive line. So when you're like, oh, this is fired up, I'm fired up to have juniors, I'm like, golly, we've never had to play a sophomore on the offensive line, and that's a good thing. So
no doubt.
But it is hard, and it's hard to be young, but you know, it's, like you said, it does teach you a lot of lessons. As long as those kids come back, they're way better for it. So the last question I call victory formation, and when the outside world looks at a coach, they'll often judge them based on wins and losses or accomplishments of the players, but the potential legacy of a coach can have on his players and his own family has a much more lasting value than really anything that can be measured. What legacy or impact are you striving to create through coaching that you couldn't do in any other profession?
Yeah. I think that's an easy one, really. You know, I'm not afraid to tell kids I love them. You know, I remember when I had the opportunity to take this job, you know, it's kind of who I am. You know, when I was at the collegiate level and I'm going to set into your household, you know, I told parents straight to their face, hey, I'm going to love your kid. And I'd look at the recruit and I told him, I said, listen, you know, your parents love you, and there's a responsibility and accountability with that love. And, you know, if you're out of line and you love somebody, you're going to correct them, you know, and you're not going to be mean. You're not going to do those things, but you're not going to let them continue to do those things. And, you know, and I talked to my son about our program a lot. And I remember my first year, I said, hey, do they understand we love them? And he said, Dad, I don't think so. And, you know, I asked him now, I said, hey, do you think the kids know that we truly love them? Like, we love them. And he's like, Dad, I think they do. And I think that love for your kids, you know, your kids only, and then your program and those kids, I think that's what's going to, you know, be what I want to be remembered for. And I think it's not about what other people remember your program for. It's about the kids that were in your program, you know, because somebody out of your program could remember you based on one thing, but your kids are going to remember you based on, you know, multiple things. What was your consistency? And I think our kids would say, hey, you know, coach loves us, you know.
Coach, that was a phenomenal last answer. I love how easy it was for you to name that, and you have a clear identity of what that, you know, what the importance and value you have as a coach is. And I think that's phenomenal. We really appreciate your time. We wish you nothing but the best of luck in this upcoming season, and hope it's a one that's headed to the playoffs and beyond. And you know, we appreciate you spending your time with us and sharing your thoughts.
Hey, really, this was awesome and excited. And, you know, and I think our game is so special. And I appreciate what you're doing for the game and, you know, and doing for our profession. So I really appreciate it. This was really cool.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.